Hello, podcast listeners. It's been a minute. It's your old buddy, Daniel Barnes, host of the show, the Dare Daniel podcast. Missing in action is Corky McDonald. Thank you, Corky, for handling these last couple of intros. We've both been very busy the last few months, indicated by the fact we haven't even been able to get together on these short little intros to this Best of Dare Daniel series we're doing. I still don't have any details about new podcast episodes, and we're never going to deceive the real fans of the show. And if you're listening to me babble through this intro to our review of the Jay Leno, Pat Morita, buddy cop comedy, you are a true fan. You might be a stalker. Cards on the table. I'm concerned about your mental health. So no details, but I can say this. Things are finally happening, even if only in theory. Decisions have been made. Processes have been set in motion. Not sure when we'll have new episodes. Can't give you a date. I would maybe late summer, early fall. But trust me, things are happening. So I don't want to hear all this, hey, where's the meh? And when are you going to, and when, give me the, bleh. I mean, listen to yourself. You're barely using words, my God. But until then, we're going to just keep churning out these Best of Dare Daniel episodes. And we'd love to hear your picks for an episode that you'd like us to revisit. Hopefully together next time. I'm recording this one so close to the release date that I have to do it flubs and all. No edits here. But I am a professional podcaster, so that is nothing to me. And shout out to Johnny Flores, of course. Shout out to Johnny Flores of Flores Podcast Consulting. He's the one who molded me, shaped me, broke me down to my essentials, built me right back up from ground zero, molded me into the pro that I am today. And when I first appeared on Johnny's show, Serious Talk Seriously, way back when, so old, I drank the wrong grail. But I was so uncomfortable talking in front of a microphone. But you know what? You get the reps in, you do the work, you put in the work, and here we are all these years later, and now I are good talk guy. I lost it. All right, on to this week's film. For these last couple of episodes, me and Corky decided we just wanted to pick some personal favorites. We were kind of going with the most popular episodes we've done. These ones, we just were like, you know, which ones do we have affection for ourselves? Corky, last 2 weeks ago, he chose Jaws: The Revenge, which to me, I got no issues with the pick. Heck of an episode. To me, that's like going to the luxury Christmas tree lot, picking out the biggest, most expensive tree. It's already got ornaments on it. The full Montanaro treatment. It's just been totally princess switched out. My pick, it's that scrappy little tree that nobody wanted. You bring it to the Christmas pageant, and everyone hates it at first, but you decorate it, and your love makes it bigger somehow. This one that I picked, Collision Course, filmed in the late 1980s, released to cable in the early 90s. It's one of our least popular episodes of all time. I think this was the last of like the old school episodes that got to 100 downloads. Like, nobody wanted this episode. This is like, this was discarded, this thing. I just found it and I'm trying to nourish it and nurse it back to life. But yeah, Collision Course, it's a buddy cop comedy set in Detroit. It stars Noriyuki Pat Morita. He was born to Japanese immigrants in Isleton on the Delta. It's about a 30-40 minute drive from Sacramento. Mostly, I was kind of noticing, like, born in America, but he mostly played foreign-born characters in his career, which just kind of highlights the very limited role for Asian actors in film and television, and especially Asian-American actors. Morita develops spinal tuberculosis at age 2. He spent nearly a decade in full-body casts in hospitals. As soon as he was better, he was released and sent directly to a World War II internment camp, where he spent several years. After the war, his family ran Ariyaki Chop Suey in Sacramento, right here. A lot of Sacramento roots for Morita. After his father was killed in a hit-and-run accident in the 50s, Morita worked at the DMV. He worked in Aerojet in Rancho Cordova. That's our old stomping grounds. quit Aerojet to try his hand at comedy, struggled for many years before relocating to Los Angeles. He found work as opening act for Vic Damone, for Connie Stevens, and for Red Fox, and found recurring roles on TV on MASH and with Fox as Achu on Sanford and Son. Got his first real big showcase as Arnold on Happy Days. Also played Arnold on the short-lived spinoff Blansky's Beauty. Marita starred in his own sitcom, Mr. T and Tina, but his career was languishing by the time Karate Kid came along. That film earned him, his performance in that film earned him an Oscar nomination, and the character of Mr. Miyagi really revived his career. 5 years later, though, languishing again, this time in Collision Course alongside Jay Leno, apparently a comedian and talk show host of some renown. So why did I pick Collision Course? I'm curious. Is it really that bad? I look at some of our really low-rated episodes and I get it. That wasn't a great pick to review. We weren't on. It wasn't funny. Something wasn't connecting. I get it. Low interest and they aren't quality episodes. You're never going to revisit them. Fine. Great. I remember having fun with this one. Plus, Collision Course was dared by my beautiful wife, Darcy, so it's got a special place in my heart. My favorite scene is pretty obvious. It's the reverse vehicular manslaughter. Usually you think vehicular manslaughter, a car killed somebody else, right? In this case, it's like the driver gets killed by the pedestrian. It's this scene, I have a clip for it in the post for the show. It's the scene at the end where Marita just runs at a car, leaps into the air with some very interesting blue screen work, and smashes, just decapitates him instantly. The driver of the car is the bad guy. The scene that we have on there, the clip from YouTube, it omits what happens after that, which is that he's just sort of like flailing around like in the windshield. And you just realize like this dude did not have a plan, did not act like you had a plan. You thought, okay, I'm going to decapitate this dude. But you didn't think like, all right, well, after that, his headless body is still driving the car that I'm stuck in. But whatever, it all worked out, as you will see. So without further ado, wackadoo, Collision Course, ? Was it really that bad of an episode? You be the judge. Enjoy.
And now, our feature presentation.
Collision Course, the first sounds we hear, actually. We hear a car revving up, speeding up, some kind of big Detroit muscle car, and then crashing, which is the perfect metaphor for this movie.
Perfectly tells you this movie is a wreck.
And I know I get bogged down on this every single time. Every single time. The music in this movie is fucking insane. It is so overbearing. It is all saxes and synths.
And it's so 80s. It's so doing the Neutron Dance music. Oh, it's all God, this bad Motown.
Really
the
like the blaring, like, wah! Sax, you know, that
Whispers,
kind of sax.
Denise Williams,
Lost Boys
Surface.
On the Beach sax.
You get an opening credits roll of transportation. That's all it is. It's Detroit, cars driving, trains moving.
A lot
moving.
Of helicopter shots of factories and, you know, car lots and stuff like that. Yeah, and aerial shots of Detroit. We see the Cadillac building. We see Jay Leno, who is driving in a vintage automotive.
He pulls up to a stoplight, and there are two black guys in a muscle car, and they're eating pizza out the window of their car.
They're eating pizza.
Like you do.
And I think he asks for some pizza. I honestly can't tell because as the dialogue is happening, they're both revving their engines. The sax score is still blaring. I could not hear a single word anyone was saying.
No, I had to put closed captions
on. It sounded like, did he want pizza? Explain what the fuck was happening in that scene.
He demands their pizza. And they argue, I guess, about the cars.
Yeah.
And then
they're driving some big muscle car. He's driving like a vintage auto.
Yeah. And somehow they both know they're going to race.
Yeah.
They couldn't hear each other. I couldn't hear each other.
But they're both sort of lurching forward. And then, boom, they take off and they start drag racing.
Yes. Instantly, a cop pulls them over. This is quicker than Grudge Match cop pulled over Robert De Niro getting something from the 20-year-old in the car. They get pulled over immediately by a cop, and a cop who gets out who's not Leslie Easterbrook.
No.
But she looks just like Leslie Easterbrook. Pulls them over, and Leno tells the other guys to drive off. because he's a cop. He's going to talk his way out of this.
Yeah. So he comes out of the car and they're like, what were you doing, buddy? And then he makes up some story about how he was trailing some street racing gang and they ruin all this kind of stuff. And he's Detective Costas.
Yeah.
And what we're going to establish here and what will be reestablished throughout the entire film, Detective Costas does not play by the rules.
No.
Certainly not. You got rules. He ain't going to play by him.
He's going to spin his own narrative about why he was racing to these dumb beat cops.
So he talks his way out of it, Axel Foley style, and also scams the number of the lady cop, which again is another thing, which he is a
creepy, gonna see several
creepy
times,
stalkery asshole.
He demands, after he announces he's a detective, he demands several
like,
women's phone numbers.
You better give me your number.
And these women range the age of like 18
There's
to
like
40.
A girl, yeah, it was like a teenage girl at the photo stand. Oh, give me a break.
Cut to Tokyo, Japan. We're at an industrial espionage division. And a top secret turbocharger has been stolen. They just said
A top secret turbocharger prototype.
They just, these are like to be defined later in the script. And they just put that on the screen.
So basically we have Pat Morita, who is Fujitsuma. He's a Tokyo detective who's been brought in to investigate this. Is the Tokyo Detective, is that his cover?
I think the company had its own division.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Got it. It turns out Oshima, who is a former executive at this car company, has taken the turbocharger prototype and is escaped to Detroit, where they think he's going to sell it to an American car company.
Pat Morita's last name is Natsuo, and when they show Natsuo who stole the prototype turbocharger, prototype turbocharger, they show him pictures of Oshima, and it's his headshots. I love that. the actor's headshots.
Yeah, we're not going to splurge for photos.
Oh, fuck no.
No, just you got headshots? Great, bring them. So now we cut back to Detroit.
Assumedly.
And there's Oshima, because we've seen his headshot. Oshima is on the waterfront. He gets ambushed on the waterfront by Tom Noonan as Scully.
Yep.
And Randall Tex Cobb.
Do clandestine secret meetings happen anywhere but waterfronts? Do they happen like
abandoned warehouses, waterfronts? Yeah, anywhere where a crane is.
What about a Starbucks? Nobody will pay attention to you.
Yeah,
there.
Right, I know.
You're the only people out on the docks at night. You're going to get some notice.
Yeah, that's a little suspicious, guys. We see Chris Sarandon, who is the heavy, and he has a mustache.
Philip
and
Madras.
Is he supposed to be Mexican?
I think he's supposed to be Italian.
Oh, okay.
I think he's supposed to be mobbed up, but he speaks Spanish later.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know.
This is not a...
it's not a well... what's funny is that they are threatening to kill Oshima, and then inadvertently, accidentally, he has a heart attack while they're threatening him.
Yeah, they put him on a crane and hang him upside down and raise the crane, because again, you always need a crane in these kind of situations for some reason. But yeah, while he's on the crane, he has a heart attack, and they're like, oh shit, what the fuck? Now we don't know where the turbocharger prototype... Fuck.
It's hard to get through, man. But Chris Sarandon, being the efficient mob boss that he is there on scene to witness the murder happen.
He's just like, I'll just be like 50 feet back, yes. And then no one can tie me to it.
Tells them to dump the body and find the prototype, because he didn't have it with him.
And then a very awkward scene in the next scene, Tom Noonan is crushing the car with Oshima in it in a junkyard. The security guard who is manning the junkyard comes up and catches him, and Tom Noonan shoots him with a rocket. Just a handgun, but it's a rocket.
Yeah, when this happened, I was like, what the fuck?
Like, I was like, did he just shoot him with a rocket? And it turns out, yeah, he did.
Because it's just this real bad, nothing is real. There's no interesting composition in this movie. It's a really bad shot. He pulls out a gun, and his chest just explodes when you see this tracer go right to his chest.
It's fucking ridiculous.
You're like, what the fuck just happened?
So we see Fujitsuma arrive in L.A.
And here the racism begins.
Oh, boy.
Hop in, Papa-san.
Mm-hmm. And we hear Japanese music, of course, too, to signify that he's in Japanese.
Yeah, that's right. I didn't even notice that.
That's always. So then we cut to Detective Costas, which is Jay Leno, and he and his partner, Ernie Hudson, are going to make a bust.
But here's
some weird bit of comedy outside of the... you want to go ahead?
Ernie Hudson isn't his partner. They work separate divisions. Leno's in robbery. This is made very clear. Hudson's in homicide.
What? Really?
Yeah, and he always bothers him for information on... that he can only get through homicide.
Ernie Hudson gets treated like shit in this. He gets treated like with less respect than Coffee in Revolution, like Natasha Kinski's hand servant in Revolution.
He gets treated with less respect than he did in the promotion of Ghostbusters when he was cut out of all the promo materials and it was just the three you knew. But so, yeah, they're going to make a bust in a tenement.
And there's some weird bit of comedy outside where there's a Boy Scout who has cookies. Because in this universe, Boy Scouts are Girl Scouts. Hamburgers eat people. And Jay Leno is a Detroit detective. But yeah, there's some bit where there's Boy Scout cookies just like piled up outside this house where they're going to make a bust. And Leno... Leno gets Ernie Hudson to pay off the kid.
True. Yeah, and then they give him another detective to go check out, and when Leno writes his address, it's literally he just scribbles a line. It's like he can't even act writing an address out.
So they go into the house, and they have they catch the criminal, but they kind of trick him by saying that they forgot the warrant, and then he says, great, you know, lock me up, and I'll be able to sue you. And then they're like, oh, we did get the warrant. Yep. We have it right here. Because once again, Detective Costas, he don't play by the rules.
If there are rules in a book, he's going to burn that book.
That book, throw it out. You got a new board game? Just have rules? Not playing by them.
First rule he breaks, he doesn't read the rules.
But I can go counterclockwise in Monopoly if I want. I don't play by the rules.
So we find out that Leno's buddy, Mac, was the junkyard detective that got killed by Tom.
Who got shot by a rocket.
Yes.
At which point Leno reacts,
shot.
That's his emotional reaction. Like,
shot. Oh.
And it's delivered by the chief, who then immediately warns him not to involve himself in the case. It's Ernie Hudson's case. It's such a cliche. It's an angry black chief in the cop department.
Absolutely.
Cop department. Police department.
Constantly yelling about the people, the various people who are on his ass.
Yeah. So your buddy died. Stay off the case.
They never wanted people to go on cases.
No.
That's really bad detective work.
But again, he should have told him, go ahead, work the case, because Leno doesn't play by the rules.
He would have broke
that rule.
If the rule is don't work the case, guess what he's going to do? So then they mention, do you want to interview or do you want to take a look at the other guy? I don't even know if I want to say this, but this word gets a ton of...
My line right here is the word Jap is used 40,000
times. 40,000
times.
So yes, Oshima is referred to as a Jap, although someone says, can you call a Jap a John Doe? Because this movie is very, very racist.
Right.
And this isn't as like, oh man, racist Detroit cops. God, this is a real problem. It's like, no, this is like, yeah, he's Asian, and so you can't call him a John Doe, hilarious bit, right? Like, it's played for laughs, as, like, disgusting.
Right. Marita goes to Oshima's hotel room, and the thing about Pat Morita, he can just break in and out of everything, because this is another bit of the movie racism.
Yeah.
Japanese people can do anything.
Absolutely.
So he can just break right into the hotel room.
Yeah.
That you need a card key to get in, and he snoops around looking for the turbocharger prototype.
Exactly. Very good. Yeah. Leno, they find a hotel key on Oshima's body, and so even though he was told don't work the case, he's going to go investigate. So he just takes Ernie Hudson's car and leaves Ernie Hudson at the crime scene.
Tell him he's riding home with somebody else.
He's like, go ride home with somebody else. Like, fuck, asshole. But they both arrive in the hotel room, and there's a little bit of cat and mouse kind of thing. They're both sneaking around
in the dark. The filming of this, while they're both in this hotel room, the shadows on the wall, the music, it is... It's Remington Steele.
Yeah.
That's what level of production this is. It's moonlighting.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
It's
without the wit.
Super, super cheap. But the hotel has obviously been torn apart. Leno kind of gets the drop on Marita and flips on the lights. He has his gun on him and says, hey, hey, we're the monkeys. I don't know why.
I don't know either.
But I watched all the trailers and all the advertising material for this. It is in all of them.
Ugh.
That was like the top line that they were selling was Leno singing, hey, hey, we're the monkeys.
Oh, boy.
So this starts a chase scene. Marita escapes. Jay Leno chases. They're chasing up and down these hotel elevators at the St. Regis
Another
Hotel.
Another 80s
cliche.
Cliche. Another 80s cliche, the glass elevator chasing.
Chasing on a glass elevator. Absolutely. Yeah. And the music is going nuts. Leno actually says, while they're searching for Pat Morita, hold anybody that looks different.
Yep. Yep.
What zany racism. So they catch Marita, and there's this whole bit with all the racist cops. The racist cop from Homicide takes Marita in a room and says that he speaks some Jap.
Right.
At which point he says things like teriyaki and sukiyaki. He's
just laying it on thick.
It's just hilarious.
And you know he's the bad cop because he's a fat guy who's balding. And you know, like, oh, this he can't be likable.
Yeah. So Marita is pretty much keeping his mouth shut. Leno is super pissed off. And they find out that Marita is here on some kind of business.
Here's the thing. All this movie, they're saying Jap, they're making comments like that. But I was like, yeah, okay, the shitty cops are racist. Because up to that point, they're the only ones really laying that on. It's like, yeah, there's cultural differences. It's the 80s, economically depressed Detroit. Right. We're mad at the auto industry, whatever. But now Leno gets in on it, like hardcore. He starts doing Godzilla bits.
Does Godzilla. He mentions Madame Butterfly, Kabuki Theater.
There's not a Japanese or not even an Asian reference that does not get untouched.
And they're not even jokes. No. It's just like Kabuki Theater, Godzilla, boom, Japanese.
Yeah, it's just Asian reference after Asian reference. And that was the point where I was like, oh, no, this isn't just these cops are unlikable.
No, this is racist. The sensibility of the film.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Pat Morita explains that he is there on this mission and he's a Japanese detective.
Yeah, he says he's a Tokyo cop. They call the corporation and there's some kind of miscommunication. But
they all speak Japanese.
Yeah.
So they just go on his word.
Yeah.
Like, this man was found at a hotel room of the dead man who was murdered.
Yeah.
And they just go on his word that the Japanese that was spoken on the phone is saying, yes, he's a detective.
Oh, he talks Japanese. Well, okay. Good enough. So, they let Marita go, but Costas, that's Jay Leno again, he is still suspicious, so he's going to tail him around. Fujitsuma first goes to a photo shop, and he drops off some photos, which it turns out are Oshima's photos that he found in the hotel room.
Leno must have been overjoyed at having to dress for this movie, because it's no different than how he dressed in the late 80s.
Yeah, exactly.
Doing stand-up. Suit, coat, open collar, shirt, jeans.
It's just like he went right from there to the club.
Exactly.
So at this point, we're introduced to Jared. That's Jared. Jared, who is some rich automaker, and he's about to introduce the Jared Starburst, which has some kind of exciting new part in it. I wonder if that could be... So now it's very clear that Chris Sarandon owns Jared and you know, he's a puppet at this point.
And we're going to have Tom Noonan following Derek Jared around for the rest of the movie.
Absolutely. Fujitsuma goes to investigate the Jared auto factory, and he gets into the building first by just grabbing a riding lawnmower and riding right past the security guard. And then we see him inside, and he's dressed as a custodian, and he's just basically having his run of the place, wearing various worker outfits.
So this was the one bit where I said there's a positive in this movie, and it's the performance of Richard Gant, character actor, legend Richard Gant. Jay Leno's way to get in, because he's a smooth-talking Axel Foley type, is to con these security guards wannabe cops about that he can hook them up with jobs. And Richard Gant, I thought this made me laugh. This one scene made me actually laugh. It was good. Richard Gant delivers a great performance of a security guard who just loves hearing from a cop that he's doing a great job. Yeah. Meanwhile, giving him all the information of how to get in and out of the building. It was a pretty good performance.
Yeah, I mean, I will say the level of character actors in this movie is sky high, because we'll see there's a few more to come.
Yeah.
So Costas captures Fujitsuma and handcuffs him to the car. But as they're driving, they see a purse thief.
That's good writing.
Yeah. So Fujitsuma is like, we got to chase him. And Leno's like, yeah, we're not going to chase him. And then he's like, okay, he basically shames him into chasing, doing his job as a police officer and chasing him. The purse thief hides. Leno runs past, doubles back. Fujitsuma has managed to get out of his handcuffs and whacks him on the face with the lid of a trash can.
Yeah, Pat Morita takes out like a 6'4", 23-year-old man running full steam. It's awesome.
Yeah, there's literally no point to this scene at all, except I think just to establish that maybe Fujitsuma there's more to him than he lets on.
We're friends now, is what this scene is. We're friends now, or at least we have respect for each other.
Yeah, so Casas actually takes Fujitsuma to his house. The word partners is thrown out there, and we get the classic 1980s drinking and bonding scene. It is not funny. At which point, Fujitsuma passes out in a box of KFC.
When they agree to team up, that's right. When they agree to team up, Natsuo says to Costas, he says, I will help you find who killed your friend Mac.
Right.
How the fuck does he know about Mac's death and that they were friends and partners? That's never been revealed.
Yeah.
to him. He was not at the scene where the chief reamed out Costas and told him to stay off the case.
He just knows everything.
And then Costas tells him, he warns him very much, you only get one chance.
Yeah.
One shot. Which, now we're in Detroit, and I can see a young Marshall Mathers watching this movie and say, I can make a career out of this.
But they do go to 8 Mile at one point.
That's true.
Yeah, so it's all connected. So I mentioned Fujitsuma, very unfunny drunk scene, ends with Fujitsuma passed out in a box of KFC. So there are some commercials going on, the product placement going on in there.
Oh, yeah.
However, that product placement is nothing compared to the product placement of Pepsi Cola. The only well-framed shots in this movie are of Pepsi products. Like, I don't think Louis Teague was even on set for that. They had a Pepsi executive come in and shoot those specials.
Yeah, the other four directors were Pepsi execs.
It is lovingly shot in every scene. The logo is always perfectly facing. And as we'll see, the key to solving the mystery comes with a picture of Pepsi.
Oh, that's right!
Yes. It's like fucking Mac and me. It's all Pepsi.
So the next day, after they wake up hungover at the apartment, they go to...
Well, Leno wakes up hungover. Marita is bright and shining, and he has cleaned up Leno's absolutely disgusting apartment.
Because Japanese people can do anything. Japanese people are magic in this movie.
Absolutely, they are.
Leno has no wit and no charm, but at least certainly he's xenophobic. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Yeah, he says, quote, you guys came along and ruined Detroit. Like, really? That's your take on that? Oh, man. And we also, once again, see Leno's very stalkery method of hitting on women, which is, say, I'm a cop, give me your number or else.
When they go to the auto show the next day to trail Derek Jarrett, Marita is accosted by Tom Noonan, and he says, what's your name? He says, Dwayne Johnson, The Rock,
I
right?
know, yeah.
Leno, who is across the place at this busy auto show hitting on a woman who basically ignores him, good on you, woman.
Yeah.
Comes over and is like, Dwayne? How did he fucking hear Dwayne Johnson? This movie is so fucking bad.
It's so fucking sloppy. Scully, that's Tom Noonan, his behavior at the auto show makes everyone suspicious because he's taking the CEO of the company and just like smacking him around on the trade show floor. It's not a very, very good criminal behavior.
The other things in this movie, like Marita, when he says the words piece of shit, he calls someone a piece of shit, but then he hears fry your ass.
Yeah.
And he doesn't know that. Like, he knows some colloquialisms, but not others. The hijinks are just there just for whatever needed on that page.
Yeah, it's like the kids in Renaissance Man who had never heard of a play and had never heard of Shakespeare, but knew It's Rotten in Denmark and knew what that meant. So, yeah, Scully makes the cops suspicious, so they follow him. They follow him to a bowling alley. And fun fact, this is an actual bowling alley in Detroit. It's still open. It's called Garden Bowl.
Mm.
It is the longest continuously operating bowling alley in the United States. It has been open since 1913.
Interesting.
Yeah, so it has now two claims to fame, because also Collision Course was shot there. So they follow him into this bowling alley, at which point...
Full of economic anxiety.
Oh, there's a lot of economic anxiety going on, because as soon as they see an Asian guy, they are ready to murder him.
Every game stops.
Murder. Like, they just see an Asian guy. Like, someone says, somebody here order sushi, and then Randall Tex Cobb is there, and he's straight up ready to just, like, yank him out. It was like they were all just waiting there.
Right.
Like... They are very excited by his presence, and they're very angry because Japan has ruined America, and of course, here's the symbol of all Japan.
But there was one funny bit, I thought, at least attempt at a joke, where half of the guys, you think they're going to beat them up, but they just come in, they start arguing tariffs and economic trade stuff. They try to do a little take on it.
It doesn't
subvert
work.
It. No, it doesn't work.
Because it's so clumsily written
and
shot.
But this bowling alley brawl, because it turns into a full brawl, is set to Rockwell. it's so not of the moment, right? There's a big brawl, but it's set to this 80s synth pop funk music.
Yeah, so we get the classic fist fight, very overbearing music. Mike Starr is in the scene, so I was mentioning other great character actors. Mike Starr, the fine character actor, is one of the economically anxious workers. Also Ron Taylor.
Yeah.
The big Barry White looking motherfucker from Trading Places.
Yep.
But yeah, this fight scene, it's brutally unfunny. It's poorly shot. At one point, both Marita and Leno get knocked down on the floor together, and Leno, of course, is quick with the punchline. It had to be my luck. I met the one Japanese man who doesn't know karate. Fucking...
I don't even know. How do they get out of this? I don't even know.
they kind of get thrown out of the build, or they just run out of the bowling alley, yeah, and they're out on the street
they're
now.
They're just out on the street next.
What's weird is that the fight, like, spills out, and there's, like, two black guys who are just, like, beating the shit out of each other. While this is, like, savage beating, while this is, and the woman is jumping on and trying to grab him away, and they're just doing comedy bits. Like, this is not a love letter to Detroit.
Right. No.
They just go into a random place, actually a landmark of the city, and every person in that place starts to commit a hate crime.
Yeah.
That then just spills out into the street, and people are just randomly punching each other.
And if you think back to earlier when they didn't even like each other, they bonded over their need to stop a purse thief robbing from an old white woman. Now these two black guys are just beating the crap out of each other. Hey.
They don't blink an eye.
No, exactly.
They don't even acknowledge it. But Fujitsuma and Kasas are buddies now. So Fujitsuma finally shares the whole truth about the stolen turbocharger prototype.
And this is the first time Kostas asks him for any proof of it.
Yeah.
This is the first time anybody questions his story.
Anyone asks for any proof for anything. They decide that Scully's behind this, so they go to Scully's house. And, of course, Leno just breaks right in because why? He doesn't play by the rules.
And you know this is coming back when he says it's probable cause. And then the way Marita repeats probable cause. I'm like, I wrote coming back. Yep. I know this is coming back.
So while in the house, they find the rocket gun that shot the guy Mac at the dump. They find the rocket gun.
Which Leno picks up and says, the gun that killed Mac.
Because remember? But Scully drives up and sees them in the house because they just left their car out in the front of his house.
And Scully just has printouts of how the gun works on his desk. They found the printouts, the PDF documents of how the gun works, the gun in another room.
So he sees them, and out of his trunk, he pulls a legit rocket launcher out. Yeah. They see him, and he shoots the house just as they jump out the back window, here's my one positive thing that I will say about this movie. Nice stunt.
Sure. Yeah.
Nice stunt, because you see it in one shot. You see two guys jump out of a window onto the ground, and then you see a big explosion behind them.
Sure. Pat Morita and Jay Leno run to catch a train, and I say Pat Morita and Jay Leno, but it was like Stan Morita and Phil Leno, because it was not them, jumping on the train. Close.
Although I will say, it's even more jarring to actually watch Jay Leno run.
That's right. They don't show him run for more than like half a block.
Watching him run with a gun, it just looks so wrong.
It is weird. Yeah, you're right.
But they managed to just jump on this train that happens to go right by.
At 5 miles an hour.
About 5 miles per hour.
And then stops.
With open doors.
It stops immediately as soon as they jump on. So now Scully's got him trapped. And I'm sitting here watching this movie, and I wrote down, who writes a scene where a killer with a rocket launcher has two cops pinned down in a train?
So, yeah, the train stops and Scully catches up with him, but Fujitsuma is carrying a grenade.
Yeah, he found in the house.
So he throws the grenade, which falls into a fruit cart.
But I forgot to say that train conveniently stopped by a bunch of watermelons because we can't have an explosion without some effects.
Some fruit, yeah. So they're like, we'll throw you the turbocharger prototypes. They throw the grenade, and when he looks into the fruit cart, kaboom, Scully's dead.
Yeah. So now we're at Philip Madras because somehow they now know Madras is behind it.
Leno has figured it out. Well, there's some kind of connection to Chris Sarandon's character. So they figured out that it's this rich guy, and we find Amadris is like a sort of pillar of the community type. He's setting up a new free clinic.
Yeah.
Socialism, bad.
So he's at this public event where he's got, of course, the shovel in the ground with a bunch of community people. Texcom is there. And again, kind of like how Tom Noonan was pushing Derek Jarrett around on the showroom floor, Texcom just walks up to Philip Madras, who's an obviously important man in the local community.
Yeah.
This man has got to be a known felon, right? He's got, and then he's just walking up, whispering in his ear.
He's in like biker gear.
No reporter's like, why are you talking to murderers? Why do they have access to you?
But Leno decides to confront him right there at the ceremony in front of everyone and actually yells at him, I'm on your ass! Which is very troubling.
And then he starts fighting cops. Leno starts fighting cops.
Yeah. So Leno and Marita are brought in. Both of their bosses are yelling at them simultaneously, one in American, or one in English, one in Japanese. This is where we see Pepsi products are just all over everyone's desk. There's a machine everywhere. They're going to hold Fujitsuma before sending him back to Japan, but Kostas actually helps him break out. And because he doesn't play by the rules.
The chief says to Casas, Scully was blown to bits along with half the city. What? There was like one fruit stand.
There was like a few watermelons. Come on. Don't oversell
it. But we
it.
Do have a gun and badge scene.
They go for, I don't know why exactly, but they go to what I can only describe as a sax synth club. Because the blaring sax synth music that has been happening the entire film, now there's a whole club for this blaring sax synth music. And does Pat Morita get up and do a silly dance? Yes, he does.
To a song called Can You Feel the Friction?
I could.
Pat Morita's getting down with like four fly girls.
It's so embarrassing, honestly. Yeah. I mean, I want to say that like Morita comes out of this unscathed, but he doesn't. He looks so bored. I know he got paid for this movie, and that's the only reason he did it.
Yeah.
And it's just like, he's as bad as Leno, honestly.
Yeah, well, but for somebody, he has impeccable comic timing.
I will say that, yeah. So as bad as Leno is not fair, but I guess Leno, you know, Morita had done decades of TV and movies at that point. So yes, you're right. He has comic timing, but anytime it asks for a comic take, it's usually a funny face or a funny dance or him rolling his eyes
or an accent
or like doing, you know, like thumbing his chin at people and stuff. It's really just low stuff.
It is. Somehow we got a Duke's 88 gang clue. I don't know what this is.
So this is the Pepsi machine.
Okay, yeah, that's right.
So they are looking through, they look through Oshima's photos, and they see one that they think is a family picture, but he notices a Pepsi machine in it, and it's tagged by a local gang, the 8 Mile. I think this is where that comes up.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh my God, that picture was actually taken here.
There's a
Duke's, which somehow they figure out, oh, fuck this dumb fucking
there's thing. A Duke's 88 gang tag on that delicious Pepsi machine that only cost $1. Is this a full commercial?
But yeah, Pepsi solves the mystery somehow. It's like Pepsi is the clue to solving the mystery. But now they're going to break into another place, and now Morita doesn't play by the rules either. It's come full circle.
He says the words probable cause.
Oh. Now we jump to, and this is inexplicable, race day.
Yeah, Grand Prix.
Because what?
I don't know.
This was not set up at all.
Somebody was like, Detroit, cars, there's a Grand Prix.
Sure, racing, cars, chase, something. So the bad guys and the good guys both descend on the garage where Oshima brought his rental car.
Yeah.
Which I don't know how they've figured this out, but they've figured out that the turbocharger is in the rental car. It's in the engine of the rental car that Oshima had.
And the Pepsi charger was at the place where the rental car got fixed.
Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah. So everyone descends on the garage, and the guy at the garage is like, hey, I don't have it here. It's in the rental car, which is fucking wherever, right?
Yeah,
it's at the rental car place, I guess. They brought it back to the They brought it back to the rental.
Or was that the car being
It's at budget rent-a-car. No. It's at budget rent-a-car.
Okay.
Yeah. They brought his rental car.
I stopped paying attention.
Oh, who gives a shit, though? But yeah.
But again, Philip Madras, local businessman, now surrounded by 8 murderers with guns.
Yeah, so all that matters is the bad guys are there, and Casas and Fujitsuma are there. This starts a big shootout and a big chase. Leno tries to grab one of their guys as a human shield, and he is just completely...
This shootout makes no sense.
Yeah. They run off. They take off on a motorcycle.
Yep.
What's hilarious about this is just as the chasing is about to start, you see Leno and Morita jump on the bike right before we get to the stuntmen who are going to be doing this.
Yeah.
Morita somehow he grabs a helmet and awkwardly plunks it on top of Leno's head because it's like, who the fuck are you going to get a body double for Jay Leno? Seriously. You'd have to go to the Jim Henson Creature Shop. But this starts a really long, like, the motorcycle chase, which, of course, has very blaring music. Leno's on the motorcycle. There's these Indy cars that are zipping all around them. The bad guys are chasing them. Marita's on the back of the motorcycle, hanging on, doing funny faces.
But, of course, this car chase has to go through several fruit vendors. Car chases do not happen in worlds where fruit vendors are not everywhere.
No. Here's the thing, though. That's another car chase that comes later. You skipped the car chase.
I admit, I took a piss, a drink, and went for a delicious Pepsi.
So this car chase ends with the motorcycle going off of a handy ramp that is there and flying down a tunnel while Saranen and his goons get trapped.
Yeah.
So now they decide it's a race to the rent-a-car place. So they go to a random rent-a-car place? Absolutely not. Budget rent-a-car. Because everything is a fucking product placement in this movie. So they go to budget rent-a-car, and they're like, the budget rent-a-car people just rented the car out to some old lady. it's the car that's right out there. The old lady steps on the gas, and because it's a stolen turbocharger prototype in the engine, the car just rockets off. Rockets off.
I missed all of this.
You missed all of that? Jesus Christ.
You did a very good job recapping it, though. I assume. I mean, I didn't miss it.
So the lady takes off. She crashes the car. They run up to Kostas and Fujitsuma, run up to her in the car that has the stolen prototype turbocharger in the engine. They pull her out of the car, and they speed off in the car because now Saarinen and his goons are going to chase, and now that starts another car chase. What is hilarious, though, is as they speed off in the turbocharger prototype car, just like in Can't Stop the Music, the old woman yells at them, "You shithead!"
She chases them for a bit, too. Shithead.
So this starts another car chase. Now, this one ends with a spectacular crash, like all 80s movies do, yes, into a fruit stand.
Okay.
Fruit everywhere.
Yeah, okay, good. So we want to talk about positives for this movie. This ending is the fourth quirky positive for the movie.
Oh, my
This ending God. Comes the fuck out of nowhere.
Nowhere. Just remember, this has been a very lifeless,
yeah,
pretty straight, dumb action comedy from the 80s.
It's TV total, movie is
total
what it's
genre
been.
Piece.
Boring
total
as shit.
Genre piece. So there's this spectacular crash. Leno and Marita take off down an alley. They start running down an alley. Saarinen is maybe like 40 yards back or something like that. Pulls out his gun, starts shooting. Boom! Hits Leno in the leg. Leno goes down. Can't get up. Marita,
you want to see some acting? You see Leno take a bullet to the leg, go down, then crawl across the ground.
You believe it.
Masterclass.
Oh, my God. So Chris Saarinen sees, Leno's down. He can't get up. I'm going to take my car, and I'm just going to drive straight at him. Just going to drive and run him over. Even though I have a gun, I'm going to drive straight at him. Leno's on the ground. He sees the car coming. Marita's like, get up. Leno says, run away, get out of here. Marita is like, no, I'm not going to do that. And he decides.
This part.
Remembering that a key character trait of Fujitsuma is his inability to do karate. He does not know karate. And when we see him in fight scenes, he looks totally helpless.
Yeah.
He's also about 60 years old. He sees the car speeding at him and decides, I'm going to run at this thing.
Yeah.
He starts running full speed at the car.
Screaming
out
loud. Car's
coming to him. Full to the car. Car, him, car,
and
him, car,
and Chris Saarinen has now seen what's happening and figures, great, I'm going to run this guy over.
Then gonna,
run,
two for one.
And laughing maniacally as he's speeding up.
Absolutely.
At him.
As they are about to collide, Pat Morita leaps up, and this movie that, like I said, has been a cliched 1980s action comedy the entire running time, for 12 seconds turns into Kung Pao Enter the Fist. He jumps, leaps through the windshield of the speeding car, and kicks Saarinen square in the face, killing him.
2 feet right into his face. His face explodes.
His face just explodes in close-up.
Now we have Marita laying on the outside of this car.
On the outside. The car's going wild.
The car is still being driven by a headless man.
Decapitated. His head has been kicked clean off. The car
somehow misses a Leno who was laying right in front of it.
Misses Leno, hits the building, at which point the car catches fire. And Marita gets out, and they have to drag each other away from the explosion. Which, again, in this movie about domestic car production and this economic anxiety of this economy that has gone away from Detroit, kicking an American car causes it to burst into flames.
A jump kick at a speeding car crashes the windshield, and a man's head
goes through the windshield like it's a Ziploc bag.
Goes full
as soon as the
fruit
car takes
vendor stand.
Any impact, it bursts into flames.
Oh my God!
Yeah, it is. It's so fucked because like this movie is 95 minutes of just the most boring, cliched, who gives a shit about any of this shit. And then for 10 seconds, Pat Morita leaps through the windshield of a speeding car and kicks a man straight in the face.
That tacked on ending, it should have been like Collision Cloverfield course. You know what I mean? Because that ending just came out the fuck out of nowhere.
And the hilarious thing is like they're both dripping in blood.
Yes.
The music is getting really dramatic and heavy. We were on the couch like laughing hysterically.
I was crying laughing.
Oh my God, it was
amazing.
And the
scene when he flies into the car, it's such a green screen shot.
It's so
Marita
cartoonish.
Like shifts from the left side of the screen to the right to where Saarinen, so you can see Saarinen, and then he just gets blocked by Marita. Not only does he jump kick, he does a jump kick with English, you know?
So that's it for that. So in the next scene, it's they're at the airport. Fujitsuna's heading back. He's in a wheelchair.
Because there's no repercussions of any of all of that.
No. Costas is on crutches. Yeah, all of this destruction that they caused. So they get a farewell. Fujitsuna rues that he's heading back to Japan without the stolen turbocharger prototype. But guess what Leno produces?
By way of the not Leslie Easterbrook.
Stolen turbocharger prototype. Yep. So he gets that back. And they're best buddies now, and they're both leaving. And then we get, I don't know if I have ever seen this before, but you know, in the 1980s, freeze frame ending.
Yeah.
That's a classic 80s thing. Split screen freeze frame. It turns to Morita in his wheelchair. He turns around, freeze frame, boom, it goes to a split screen, and then bam, Leno freezes.
And they're both kind of frozen, not on like these really good smiles, like at the end of Karate Kid where Morita's just smiling.
They look relieved.
They're just kind of like mid-movement. The other thing, like, we talk about how much this movie is of the 80s of a different time. Just that scene in the airport when he gives him that prototype turbocharger and then tells him to hide it.
A just man hide, yeah, hide
boarding
a
plane with a giant machine that he's kind of hiding. That would not go down on a plane today.
On an international flight? You don't think so?
Oh, sure. Businessman hiding something secretive? Come on in.
So that's the end of the damn movie. Yeah. Then there's just some blaring synth and sax and there's credits roll.
Denise Williams song at the end.
And I saw most of the songs were written by the same people who did the score.
Yeah.
So that was not a good decision.
Oh, boy.
So let's wrap it up and let's give our ratings and then let's cast this movie to
the land of wind and
the
shadows.
Land of wind and shadows where it shall never bother us again. Quirky, or any
AKA
final thoughts?
AKA Detroit.
Yeah.
Ooh. Oh, yeah. Take that, Detroit.
Topical humor. So any final thoughts on a little film called Collision Course?
We've stressed it a bunch, but really, this movie is from a different era. The buddy cop.
It's from a more racist era.
And I got excited a couple months ago on a mini episode when I thought we were getting Dared Running Scared. Because there's a thing about these 80s cop movies that I'm fascinated about. The extra legal abilities of these cops.
Right.
They don't suffer any consequence. The worst thing is they have to turn in their gun and the badge. That's it. But they murder with impunity.
Oh, absolutely.
And we're supposed to cheer along their breaking into places because, hey, cops are cops, right? It's from a different time, excluding all the, you know, Japan, Detroit stuff. It's just the way it's made. It's fascinating for that aspect to me because I grew up in that time. But full double dare. This movie's should be forgotten. It was great to be not released.
Yeah.
Good idea on everybody.
Yeah.
They try to capitalize on Leno getting Tonight Show. Double dare. Don't watch
this. No, it's brutal. Yeah, well, you hear those stories about how, like, I mean, this movie is so much worse than the E.T. video game for the Atari 2600 that got buried in the desert. Like, if you're going to bury something in the desert, this would be the thing to do.
Sure.
It is so poorly made. Leno looks so uncomfortable. He made me so uncomfortable.
He can't act.
He can't. I mean, he's not. I don't like his comedy either. I'm not a Leno fan at all. But like watching him do character work is just brutal. I mean, he's so out of his element.
Yeah, yeah.
So yeah, a double dare for me too. It's a completely incompetent movie. Although it's got 10 amazing seconds in it, I will give it that.
Right,
jumping through the windshield of a speeding car and kicking a man's head off.
The two highlights are Richard Gant's performance and that ending.
Couldn't agree more.
So that is all we have for you on this episode of Dare Daniel Remembers the 80s. But we'll be back next week to review another one of your movie dares. In the meantime, check out our Thursday mini episode for a preview of the next Dare Daniel review, as well as more talk about your dares and movies in general.
And until then, send your most sadistic or altruistic movie dares. Thank you again, Darcy. I love you. Send them to us at daredaniel.com and be sure to follow Dare Daniel Pod on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Like and rate us on iTunes or wherever you listen to podcasts. You can also donate to the show now. Go to the Dare Daniel website and click the donate button. Any amount would help offset the costs of producing the show. About, what do you say, 15, 20 million an episode?
Yeah, about that. Yeah.
Collision Course-esque production values on the show.
$2018.
Quirky, where can people find more of your work?
I'm performing at bowling alleys and photo booths all throughout Detroit.
Yep.
And I'll be doing my one-man brand of economic anxiety-induced shows.
Last
episode I said I was hanging out with Nazis. I'm hanging with the wrong people.
Not very funny people either.
You know who would love this movie?
Who's
the blue-collar comedy tour fans.
Oh, my God. They sure would.
Yeah. More topical comedy references.
For Dear Daniel, I'm Daniel Barnes. Our producer is Johnny the Cable Guy Flores.
And I'm Corky McDonald saying probable cause.